Oh, babe, listen to the Patrick Madrid Show.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I listen to the Patrick Madrid Show with the peanut butter and nanner sandwiches.
Don't we all? I mean, seriously, Cyrus, don't we all do that? Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. My name is Patrick Madrid, as a matter of fact. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149, sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. And of course, email, you can direct those to patrick@relevantradio.com. I have a lot of those to get to, but let's go to your phone calls first. And if, as you're dialing in right now, you get a busy signal, just please hit redial. We'll do our best to get you on the air. Just keep pressing that redial button, 888-914-9149. So start off with Anthony in San Antonio. Good morning, Anthony.
Hi there, Patrick. I was wondering about the Mark of the Beast. My teacher was telling me about it, and I got like I don't know how it relates to my faith.
Okay, well, why don't we first define it? So in the book of Revelation, beginning in chapter 13, chapter 14, and forward, we see the mention of a personage, an entity known as the Beast, who seems to be in close contact with the Antichrist and assisting him in his nefarious plans to persecute God's people, etc. So the mark of the beast, we're told, is a mark in the forehead or in the hand that without which you would not be able to purchase things. You couldn't go to the grocery store, let's say. And so this mark will be known as something, to use the term again, nefarious. And people will either freely accept the mark so that they can live their daily lives, or they'll refuse to accept the mark, and the Bible talks about those people who refuse the mark of the beast will be all the more persecuted and killed, etc. So it's a sign of compromise with evil in such a way that if you say yes to it, you are in essence signing on to the Antichrist program, and if you say no to it, you are marked out for death and persecution. So in a simple sense, that's what that is. Now, we're not told exactly what the mark is or what it will look like. Some people wonder, is that a tattoo? We don't know. The Bible doesn't give us any specifics. But it is some sort of a mark that will be in some way or another visible on the forehead or the hand.
Thank you, Patrick. My second question was, I was wondering if you could maybe create like a podcast to where, like, maybe students, like, that, like, don't know the Relevant Radio, they can, like, access it, like, through, like, for example, like, Spotify or the iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you'll be happy to know. This is great news for you, Anthony. This program is carried on all of those platforms. You can get this on Spotify. You can get the Patrick Madrid Show on Apple Music, iTunes, any of those platforms. We're there. All you have to do is just say my name or type my name into the search engine and it will find it. And this show is podcast. So you can listen to it any time of the day or night, download it, share it with your friends. We even have best of clips. So if you want like highlights, you know how if you look on YouTube, certain channels will have short clips, like maybe a minute long kind of thing. We have all that for this program and all the programs on Relevant Radio, by the way.
Awesome, because I was a really big fan. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Anthony. I'm really glad that we had a chance to talk today. I appreciate that. Thank you. 888-914-9149. This is something maybe a lot of people don't know, so you can let them know. We'd prefer that you listen on the Relevant Radio app. It's easy. Crystal clear, no commercials. As long as you've got an internet connection, you can listen anywhere in the world. So if you're listening right now in the Philippines, or in Italy, or in Ushuaia, in Argentina, just tell your friends, download the app, it's free, and you can spread the love. 888-914-9149.
The podcasts are great, but that's not all the app has.
So
there's prayers, basic prayers, prayers before Mass, devotions, There's a place where you can find, if you're traveling and you need to find a church to go to, there's Mass Near Me is one of the options here. It's awesome. So if you don't have the Relevant Radio app, why don't you have the Relevant Radio app? It's free, number one free Catholic app in the world. It's phenomenal. Damien and all the folks behind it have they've blown it out of the park. This is it's incredible.
They do a great job, that's for sure. And the app is very easy to use. It's intuitive. And the best thing about it is it's easy to share with your friends. Just go to the App Store and, you know, the share button. Just when you open up the Relevant Radio app in the App Store, just hit that share button and you can send it anywhere in the world. Well, thank you for that. 888-914-9149. I have a number of emails I want to try to get to in and around the phone calls. This one is from, Teresa. And she says, I'm a Catholic. I married my husband in a Methodist church. He had a prior marriage and was married by a Nazarene pastor and later got a divorce. We spoke to a deacon in the Catholic church, and he said that a Catholic annulment would be necessary in order to have our marriage blessed and recognized in the Catholic church. My husband does not believe in the annulment process and refuses to go through it. He says he loves me and that he wants me to join his church where I will be accepted, but I cannot leave my church. We have been together for 20 years. Each day I just ask God to have mercy on us, but especially me, because I am married outside the church and led him astray, even though he says we did nothing wrong. I attend church regularly and do not receive communion. I love my Catholic faith, but do I belong to the Catholic Church? Yes, you do. Yes, you do, Teresa. And I understand your quandary. So let me offer you some thoughts that can help you rectify the situation. You, as a Catholic, if you've been listening to the program for any length of time, you know that as a Catholic, you have a special, it's a unique, special, some would think burdensome requirement for a valid marriage. And that is that you have to be married in a Catholic church with the marriage witnessed and blessed by a Catholic bishop, priest, or deacon. That's what's called the canonical form. And we've talked about it a billion times on this program, but there are a billion and one people who really want to know more about this. So this is just a quick recap. This is not something required for Protestants, Hindus, Buddhists, atheists, any two people who are not Catholic are not obliged to do this. And obviously they don't accept the teaching of the Catholic Church in any case, so they wouldn't care regardless. But as a Catholic, you do have this responsibility in order for the marriage to be valid. Therefore, as you rightly say, the situation that you're in right now is objectively an invalid marriage because your Protestant husband had been married before, got a divorce, and is now remarried to you. And here's what he needs to understand. Obviously, he probably won't listen to me, so perhaps you can relate this information to him. Jesus repeatedly in the gospel says, if a man divorces his wife and remarries, he commits adultery. Why? Because the presumption is that that first marriage was valid. If it was not valid, as Jesus refers to in Matthew 19, begin reading in verse 1, if the first marriage wasn't valid and he divorces his wife, well, he's not committing adultery if he gets quote-unquote remarried because he wasn't lawfully married in the first place. But the only way to know if you're validly married in the first place is to do the inquiry that we Catholics refer to as the annulment process. The Catholic Church cannot annul a valid, consummated marriage. What God has joined together, Jesus says, let no man put asunder. So even the phraseology, the annulment process, it's a bit misleading because the church is not really annulling the marriage. What the church rather is doing is, after due diligence, is making a determination, was this first marriage actually valid? Or is it possible that, and maybe this is where your husband has this hang up, he thinks that the Catholic Church is going to judge him or judge his wife or judge how sincere he was, or judge whether or not he tried to be a good husband, or any of those things, none of which are what's going on. The Catholic Church, in the annulment process, so-called, is seeking to find out, is it possible that there was something present in between the two people when the marriage took place that might have made it invalid? in spite of their sincerity, in spite of their love for each other. It's not passing judgment on anybody or his or her sincerity or love or good intentions or any of those things. It's simply saying, oh, is it possible that due to lack of maturity or perhaps grave fear or pressure, or maybe there was something in the wife's or the husband's background that was not revealed before the wedding that would have affected the other person saying yes or no. I mean, if, for example, let's say that your husband, actually we're talking about him. So let's say that his wife, at some point down the road, told him that she had had a couple of abortions before their wedding, obviously with different men. I mean, that's the kind of thing that if he knew about it ahead of time, it might have changed his decision-making process. He might have decided, I don't really want to marry you. I love you, but I don't want that. Some men would say that. Maybe there was some other issue. Maybe he was a drug addict. Obviously not your husband, we're talking about just theoretically. What if there was a time when the wife, she was engaged in prostitution and she reformed her life, she repented, she was on Team Jesus after that, but it's one of those things that if you don't tell your prospective husband or wife, it prevents them from being truly free to say yes to the marriage. So those are dramatic examples, and there are much more mundane examples, but this is why the Catholic Church insists on this process to take place, not to be nosy, not to judge anybody, but so that the church can then say with moral certitude that you and the husband that you're with now civilly can have your marriage convalidated, so it's a valid marriage and it's recognized as valid. Otherwise, the presumption is always going to be, until it can be proven otherwise, that that first marriage was valid. So this seems to be maybe the blind spot that your husband has, and that is the church is not doing this or requesting this to make his life miserable. The church is requesting this, number one, so that you can arrive at a certitude whether or not you can remain married to this man. And in so doing, to uphold what the Lord Jesus Christ taught about if a man divorces his wife and gets remarried, he commits adultery. Same is true for women in reverse. And adultery is one of those sins that will send you to hell if you die unrepentant. Even if you're, you know, lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey, lovey-dovey all the time, and everything's great and you really love each other, but if you're married to a man who's not, in fact, your lawful husband, in the eyes of God anyway, that's a real problem. And the church is so serious about the Lord's teaching on the importance of marriage and the insolubility of marriage and the need to be eligible to get married, that it asks, or let's just say it requires this process, not just for you, but for him. So I realize this may be an uphill battle. It's hard for me to know what to say if he's just intransigent and he's digging his heels in. I absolutely will not do this. It's hard to know what to recommend other than, in your case, because you are aware of the problem, you're aware of the high stakes nature of this situation. And if you want to be right with God and not doing things that you know are, for you at least right now, not knowing if his first marriage was valid or not, are sinful, and you know what I'm talking about, right? The one thing you can do is live as brother and sister. Now, he may hit the roof and say, absolutely not. We're not going to do that. And this is where, you know, I'm not sure what to tell you. For you yourself, if you were to live as brother and sister, and who knows, that might be an incentive for him to say, well, all right, if that's the only other option, okay, we'll go through the annulment process. And he can be, you know, grudging about it. Doesn't matter. As long as the church has an opportunity to investigate that first marriage to determine whether or not he's free to be married to you, that's all that really matters, so that the two of you can be happy. So if I were giving you advice, and I guess I am because you asked me to, I would say let him know them. If you are unwilling to see if we can't square this away by going through the annulment process, then my decision to live as brother and sister as opposed to husband and wife will be permanent. For the moment, it's going to be temporary until the church makes this determination, in which case, by the way, you can go to confession, confess all your sins, you can receive Holy Communion with a clear conscience if you're living as brother and sister. But life's too short and hell's too hot, and I don't want to go to hell, and I know you don't either. So although it is a sacrifice, I would say in your own way, just let him know, in order for me to be at peace with God, I'm going to have to do this, being brother and sister, and let's make it as short a time as possible. And the way for that to happen is we do the annulment process to find out if your first marriage was valid or invalid. Once we know, and assuming the church says it was invalid, and it may or may not, then we can have our marriage blessed, and we can resume normal married intimacy. I would think that would be a pretty interesting trade-off if he thought, well, permanent lack of that versus temporary lack of that. I'd rather go with the temporary lack of that than the permanent lack of that. You know what I'm saying? So I offer you that for your consideration. But these, as I say, these are high-stakes issues. And the Lord wants you to be happy. He loves you, and he wants you to be happy. He wants your husband to be happy. But he wants you to be happy by living in the truth. And if you live in a lie, if you live in a deceit, if you live in this murky, mushy middle where you don't really know for sure if you're really validly married or not, that's no way to live. And also, the likelihood of not going to heaven in the end goes way up. And none of us wants that for you, right? So that's my heartfelt advice, and I hope it's helpful to you. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Plenty ahead. Plenty o' calls and plenty o' emails ahead. Right after this quick timeout, you're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. I hope you'll join me this June for sponsor Christendom College's Summer Consortium. I'll serve as MC for the weekend, celebrating the legacy of St. John Paul II. Register at jp2weekend.com. That's JP, the number 2, weekend.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Hey, a big shout out to Father Matthew Spencer, who filled in for me yesterday. Thank you, Father Matthew. If you're listening, he's probably deep in prayer right now, knowing Father Matthew. But he did a great job, Cyrus. I wasn't able to listen to it, but from what I've heard from his adoring fans, he did a great job.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. We love Father Matthew.
Yeah, he's great. All right. Well, I'm always looking over my shoulder when he fills in for me.
He's very busy. That's my saving grace. You're fine.
Okay. We've got to keep Father Matthew busy. Not too busy, because I want him to fill in for me, but busy enough, because he is so good at what he does. Thank you, Father Matthew. We'll go to the phones again. Natalia, in Los Angeles. Good morning.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a quick question regarding the previous caller, about the Mark of the Beast. Mm-hmm. And I've been kind of tossing and turning about this, and it's because I have a tattoo, and I kind of made like a realization of like, what if tattoos are the Mark of the Beast? And it kind of gave me this huge wave of anxiety and thoughts of my thoughts. I kind of overthink a lot. So I'm thinking, mm-hmm. Like, am I already condemned? And like,
no.
A bunch of like, negative thoughts.
Let's pause there. First of all, the biblical explanation of the mark of the beast is a mark that people will willingly receive in order to be able to buy and sell and get along in the whatever we might call the economy in those days. So rich and poor, free and slave, they will accept this as what's necessary to live in that society. You didn't do that. First of all, the Antichrist has not arisen, and the beast has not said, hey, everybody, guess what? You all have to get this mark in your hand or in your forehead, and when you do this, then you'll get special privileges like being able to eat, being able to buy groceries. If you don't do this, we're going to kill you. You never did that, did you?
No.
Of course not. Of course not. So you did not commit that sin because the opportunity to commit that sin was never presented to you. You never recognized it as such. You never said, yeah, I'm going to go with Team Antichrist instead of Team Jesus. Where do I sign up? Where do I get my mark? You didn't do any of those things. So you can dismiss this from your mind because it's not a sin that you even could have committed because those prerogatives are not even present right now. Do you see what I'm saying? You know, it's not something you even could have done to accept the mark of the beast. And if somebody was duped into it and didn't realize what was going on and just got stamped without knowing and didn't have any clue and didn't say yes to it, that's not a sin. Because the only way you can commit a serious sin, and even sin in general, but it's certainly a serious sin, is if you consent to it, which you didn't do. Am I right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so that's how you say, nope, I didn't commit that sin. So now the matter of having a tattoo is a separate issue. I mean, and who knows whether or not when the time comes, whoever's living at that time, whether or not the mark of the beast will be a tattoo or what it will be, we don't know because the Bible doesn't tell us. And people have their own speculations, but that's all they are. They're just speculations. So in the meantime, your tattoo is a separate issue. And that's something that you could think about, you know, is this something I really want on my body? And there are ways to have tattoos removed. As I understand it, you know, it can be tedious and expensive and painful, or maybe not as tedious, depending on the tattoo. But that's a way that you could say, I don't want this in my life anymore, if you feel that way. You can have them removed. So that's a separate issue, but it doesn't mean that you in any way have done anything associated with the beast or the mark.
Okay, yeah, that's what I figured. And plainly mentioned that because last night I just submitted a request to get it removed, so I'll probably do that within the next month or so.
Oh, good.
And then another thing I thought was kind of funny was that all these thoughts obviously kind of trickle down a domino and make me think I'm condemned and make me lose my faith. And I thought it was just funny how this all started happening because I just recently got confirmed this past weekend. Mm-hmm. And I've been really excited about it and feels like it's a new chapter in my faith and my spiritual journey. So I just thought it was so funny how all of a sudden that came out of nowhere trying to like make me fall.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, it sounds as though, and it would probably take a bit more time to look into it, but it sounds as though you may be struggling with scrupulosity. And that is a condition, it's kind of like a spiritual illness, which makes you, if you have this condition, it makes you magnify things out of proportion. And it's a sense in your own mind that something that's not really at all seriously sinful, scrupulosity tells you it is seriously sinful, or something that's not sinful at all. And this condition of scrupulosity can wear on you and eat away at you because it's telling you something is not true. Like, oh, you committed a sin. You didn't put the stapler down on the right side of the desk the right way for the next person. You committed a sin. Well, no, you didn't. Where you put the stapler doesn't matter. It's not sinful in itself. But that is something that I would definitely look into because, you know, it's not a condition that's permanent and people can't overcome it, that's for sure. But do you sense that's going on in your life where things are eating away at you, that you're worried about them being sinful when there's really no objective reason to think that?
Most definitely, because even my own logic comes in and says, that's not even right, calm down. But then my mind will still kind of take it as far as it can.
Exactly. So that's something that you can overcome. And I would say there are a couple of books that I have that I think are helpful. Can I give you a book's recommendation?
Yes, please.
Okay, I would get this book and it will help you. You have a pen handy?
Yes.
Okay, so it's called Scruples and Sainthood. Scruples, okay. S-C-R-U-P-L-E-S, Scruples and Sainthood. The author is Terry Beatty, B-E-A-T-I-E.
Okay.
T-T-I-E. I told you the wrong first name. It's Trent as opposed to Terry. Trent Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-I-E. And he draws largely... It's one of the reasons that I like this book and I have made use of it extensively, and that is he draws upon the writings of Saint Alphonsus Liguori, who is a great moral theologian, a doctor of the church, and he helped a lot of people who have problems with scrupulosity. So it's very biblical. It's very much according to the great saints, Saint Teresa of Avila, Saint John of the Cross, Saint Alphonsus Liguori. So there's really good wisdom. It's so choice. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, that sounds like something really will help me. So I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, I think it will. And if you spend time reading it, and then especially maybe use some of the prayers that are in this book so that when these thoughts come into your mind, oh, I'm condemned already, I have a tattoo, I'm condemned. When you have those kind of thoughts, have these prayers ready, and then you can pray and regain your composure and regain your sense of peace.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely do that. I appreciate it so much.
You're welcome. Hang in there, Natalia. Everything's going to be okay, all right? Everything's going to be okay. The Lord loves you, and he wants you to be happy. He's not angry at you. He's not mad at you. He loves you.
He definitely does. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're
and
welcome.
Love your show. Me and my mom
Thanks.
Are big fans. And
tell your mom hello. Well, thank you. And if you start feeling, you know, worried again, give me another call and we'll work through it. Thank you. Let's go to Andrew now in Minnesota. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Patrick. Big fan of the show. My kids
thank
listen
you.
To it to replay every
Shout
night.
Shout out, so. Kids. How old are the kids?
That's right. They'll tune in and hear me. Well, ranging 18, 15, 13, and 10, they all tune
awesome.
In at various times of day to listen to the replay. So
I'm excited.
I've been challenging them to call in and ask a question, but they haven't yet worked up the gumption maybe to call in and ask.
Oh, well, I look forward to that when that time comes.
Yeah. So I have a question about the characters, or maybe they are the same character, and that's my question. Like Mary,
your phone did something weird. All of a sudden, I couldn't hear you for a couple seconds. Could you repeat that over again?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Question about Mary Magdalene,
okay.
And maybe it's three different characters, or maybe it's two, or maybe.
His phone is doing it, Cyrus. You know, it's almost like you take your mouth away from the phone for a few seconds, and then it gets very muffled. So you asked me about Mary Magdalene. Is that right? You want to know about her?
Yeah, can you hear me now? Sorry.
Yeah, I can.
Okay,
so your question is about who is Mary Magdalene?
Yeah, because I've heard recent takes that she's also the Mary, like Lazarus' sister Mary, is the same Mary Magdalene. And I've also heard that Mary Magdalene is also the woman, the woman caught in adultery, Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
So trying to understand like who she actually is. There's a lot of different mentions of somebody that might be the same person.
Right. Well, the traditional Catholic view, and this is the view that I hold, is that this Mary that we read about, the Mary whom Jesus cast seven demons out of, the woman who was a great sinner who cried at his feet and washed his feet with her tears and dried them with her hair, and Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus, are all one and the same person. Now, in the Orthodox churches, so like Greek Orthodox and others, they separate the different instances of this Mary that we see. they separated, or they claimed that it's three different women. And so from ancient times, at least, the Catholic Church has held that this is one and the same woman. And I've read people, even nowadays, who try to make the case that it's not really the same woman. It's at least two, if not three, different women. And I don't think the evidence really stacks up in favor of that. So in a simple way, I can just tell you that yeah, there is a logic or an argument that's out there that says that Mary the sinner was one woman, Mary the sister of Martha and Lazarus was another woman, and then Mary Magdalene was a third woman. But that doesn't, I don't think, really comport with the biblical evidence. I think it's one and the same woman.
All right. Well, thanks for clarifying. I think the one I have the hardest time understanding is Mary's Lazarus's sister, because mm-hmm. you know, Mary Magdalene was a follower of Jesus. She was with him a lot, it seems, and then it seems like when they go, when they go to Lazarus's house, and you have Mary kind of at the house, not with Jesus, you know, but she was a like a regular follower.
I don't think she was, though.
I mean, she was with him for. Oh, no. You don't think she was a follower?
No. Okay. I think if you watch The Chosen, you get the impression that she was like right there every step of the way with Peter, James, and John. The Chosen portrays her that way. The Bible doesn't. So Mary Magdalene appears at certain key points, but she, at least based on the New Testament evidence, there's no reason to think that she was the way she's portrayed in The Chosen, that she was there with the apostles all the time with Jesus. So it really is more the opposite, that she does appear, especially toward the end of the Lord's ministry, especially after the Last Supper, during his passion and after his death on the cross and his resurrection. But we do see her a few times before that, but not in the company of the apostles with Jesus day to day. I think it militates more in the direction that she was at home with her sister, Martha, and Lazarus, and the Lord was close with them and came and visited them. But that's what I'm saying. And I'm not trying to pin the tail on that TV show, The Chosen, but I think that has had a profound effect in influencing the way people understand the Bible, and not necessarily in a way that's consistent with what we see in Scripture. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes total sense. I do like the show. I watch the show. I don't take it as all true, but yeah, they portray certain characters a certain way, and so that's probably influencing mm-hmm. my interpretation. So yeah, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. And that's just a surmise or a speculation on my part, because it is so popular. I think it's only reasonable to assume that it has, even in subtle ways, influenced the way people think about the apostles. I never thought about St. Matthew as being as having autism. I still don't think of him as having autism, but he's portrayed that way in The Chosen. So it's mm-hmm. this artistic license or creative license, but that's my thought.
Great, thank
you. Hope that's helpful. You're welcome, and shout out to your kids. I look forward to talking to them one of these days. Okay, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with more. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. I recognize what you're doing, Cyrus. I don't even want to say anything about The Chosen, because people get very excited very quickly, one way or the other. So we'll leave it at that. I'll be right back. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at notredamefcu.com/join. That's notredamefcu.com/join.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
This has overtones of Flashdance for some reason.
I'm definitely hearing a lot of 80s.
Yeah. Oh, total 80s. I heard that this is like the number one most downloaded song on Spotify and all the other platforms, like well into the billions of downloads. Can you believe it?
It is hard to believe, like all of the great, this, I mean, this song is thumping.
She's
a
maniac,
It's got a good beat, but it does seem very 80s synth.
I bet you could sing the Maniac song to this, tune and it wouldn't sound too bad.
I wonder if, I'll look it up. I wonder if someone already has.
Or no, try Take On Me. Sing the lyrics to Take On
That's
Me.
Play the
music and just sing that.
That's what I was thinking of, was Take On Me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Those high notes are hard to hit.
Yeah, for us.
What is that one called again? Because, I mean, it's all the rage right now, but I don't even know what it's called.
This one that I just played, that's Blinding Lights.
Okay.
By The Weeknd. Your kids know. Okay. Ask your kids.
Oh, I'm sure they do. In The Weeknd, I discovered, is not a group. It's a guy. It's a person. Just like Jethro Tull wasn't a person. It was a group.
He's like,
how do you like that?
I really like that Jethro. I like that band Jethro. No, what would people
Jethro
say?
Jethro Tull.
Yeah, they would call the band a guy. That's right.
Right. Yeah, they call the band a guy. Jethro Tull. How do we get on that? I don't know.
But, I don't know.
All right, let's come back from the 80s. 888-914-9149. I know somebody's going to write me right now. Jethro Tull wasn't an 80s band. I know that. 70s. Okay, now that we got that straight. Let's go to Paul in Tomah, Wisconsin. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Patrick. My question for you is, when do I give up? When do I give up on it?
Your phone's acting weird. Your phone is cutting in and out. So I heard you say, when do I give up? Okay.
Any better? Any better, Patrick?
Kind of, sort of.
Come on.
Kind of, sort of.
Is this any better?
Let's find out. Okay. Stand on your left leg and hold your right hand up in the air, and maybe the signal will get better.
Okay.
Well,
when I was a kid, I had to go and hold the antenna. Mom would be like, all right, move it a little. All right, just hold it there for the next 22 minutes while we watch Cheers.
As the world turns.
Yeah, right.
All right, Paul, I'm not trying to mess with you. I'm really not. It's just you were cutting in and out. Let's try it again. Yeah. It's not working. How about this, Paul? Just hang up and call back, and then we'll see if we can't sort that. These things happen. You never know. 888-914-9149. Email here. This is from, let's see, this is from Maggie, and she says, I learned so much from your show, the callers, the hosts, and exchanges between Patrick and Cyrus. She says, on the last 2 weeks, I have listened when different callers have had issues with addiction. And I believe, she says, from my recollection, that they were men with pornography issues. Your advice to them was to walk away, find something else to do, and other suggestions. You mentioned a Catholic 12-step group. That's true, I did, called Catholic in Recovery. She said, I would implore you to also consider the powerlessness that addiction brings to the addict. Addiction, primarily alcohol, has been part of my family tree for generations. The last thing I had planned on doing as a Christian, I'm just trying to sort through a couple of what look like typos, as a Christian, as a young woman, the last thing I'd ever thought would happen would I'd become an alcoholic. But it happened. I woke up every day wanting to stop and not being able to. There were days or times when I did not drink, but there was a primary obsession that I believe only God could lift. So many people have found God in the rooms of 12-step programs. I am grateful I already had a relationship with God, and through the sacrament of confession, I have been absolved of my sins concerning this. The primary person I was hurting was myself. The hiding, the secret drinking. I did not ruin lives or lose my marriage or go into financial distress. I can tell you that the day I asked God to remove my obsession to drink, that very day, that very moment, the obsession was lifted. And I have not had a drink since April 29th of 2017. By the way, congratulations. That's awesome. I wanted to bring to your attention that experience that I, along with millions of others, have had in regard to the inability to stop drinking or drugging or porn on my own will. I was incapable with extra letters of education after my name, various certifications, and even a job as a clinical therapist. I was incapable, and I forgot to ask the one who is all-powerful to help me. When I did, my addiction was lifted. She says, I would encourage you to look into situations like mine where it was not me who was able to make myself stop drinking. It was the will of God and the humility to ask. And she says, with gratitude. And that's from Maggie. Well, thank you, Maggie. I do agree with and I believe what you're saying. And if you go back and listen to those calls, if you have any interest in doing so, but I mean, what you'll hear me say is that you have to do this with God's grace. So I make that point repeatedly that as Jesus says, although I didn't quote this verse in those calls, but for man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. So the underlying assumption of all of the advice that I give, especially in regard to something like this, is what you're talking about. It is that you have to ask God to help you. Now, for some people, they are not incapacitated. They're not unable to do anything. They're not helpless. They're not, in the throes of being paralyzed by this. Some people are. You mentioned that you were one of them. Fair enough. So different solutions for different people, but for all people, you will hear me say invariably that you have to rely on God's grace. Now, God's grace acted in a particular way in your life, praise God. Sometimes it doesn't operate that way, and I know that you know this because obviously you're referring to this, but when you say you're imploring me to look at this other, please believe me when I tell you that you don't need to implore me to do this because I already do this. I already do focus and am aware of beautiful, wonderful victories like the one that you achieved by asking God for his help. So lest you be concerned that I'm not aware of that, I want to put your mind at ease. And I really appreciate your thoughtful email, Maggie. Thank you for that.
Hey, Patrick?
Yeah.
You know, Paul had just called in and his phone dropped and we just couldn't get the question.
Okay.
I do have his... I wrote down the question that he gave the call screener,
okay.
And I want you to have a chance to answer it because I don't want him to think that this was his answer was not getting on the air.
Okay.
So his question is, when do you give up on a friend who has left the faith?
Okay. There's so many questions I would ask to help me answer the question better. I would ask, well, what kind of a friend? I mean, is this somebody that you knew as a kid? You've had a lifelong friendship. Is it somebody that you've recently become acquainted with? Is it a friend of the family? Is it, you know, you and your wife are friends with this couple? And the reason I would ask questions like that is because the more intimate the friendship and the more longstanding the friendship, it seems the more it would be incumbent upon you. What was the gentleman's name again, Cyrus?
It was Paul.
Paul. It would be... I think more incumbent upon you, Paul, to do as much as you can or to go longer or to go further, whatever the right term is, the more of a deep friendship you have. If it's a passing friendship, if it's an acquaintance, if it's a colleague maybe, I think all of the things being equal, you have less of a obligation to try to do as much as you can. Try to do what you can, but since I don't know the answer to those questions, I'm not sure to what degree to emphasize this. But I will say that the Lord gives us an example in the Gospels when he sends these 70 disciples out into the countryside and the towns and the villages to go preach the gospel. And he tells them, if you go into a town where they will not receive you, they will not listen, they will not even just hear you out, then move on to the next town. You know, we colloquially say, shake the dust from your sandals and move on. Shake the dust from you. It's a sign that, okay, I tried, you wouldn't listen, I'm moving on. That's on you. In other words, the town. And I would propose that that is a reasonable paradigm for people that you don't have any special obligation to. If your friendship is deep and longstanding, I think you have more of an obligation due to the friendship and the nature of the friendship. And therefore, you do the best you can, go the extra mile, keep trying, that kind of thing. But don't beat your head against the wall. So if you're, let's say you have a friend, you've known him for 20 years and you had a great friendship, but it seems to be fizzling because he's now outward bound and not interested in, let's say, the faith that he once had. See, these are all questions I would ask if I were able to ask. So in a case like that, I mean, don't beat your head against the wall. It's bad for you and the wall doesn't like it. But make an effort as best you can to share the truth. And if you meet with absolute resistance or hostility or who knows what the reaction is, you're not obligated to endlessly beat your head against that wall. You're not. You do the best you can. Okay, I'm really sorry to see you go your own way. But if that's where you're heading, okay, I wish you weren't, but I'm sorry, and leave it at that. And I know it's easier said than done because friendships, when they end, can be painful. And sometimes friendships do end over something like this, where you're the one left standing where you once were and the other person has moved off onto... I know somebody. I don't know her really at all. I think I might have met her perhaps once in person. But in my long career in the world of Catholic stuff, I remember a woman who was like super, super Catholic and in the media and all that. I don't want to get too specific, but she was like super Catholic and that was what she was known for. And she completely went off the rails. And she wound up going into, you know, a very immoral lifestyle and all that. So she went from being like this poster lady for Catholic things, and her life veered in the wrong direction. And that happens sometimes. Now, she and I were never friends. We never really even knew each other beyond a few formalities of working on, you know, something, a project or something that we both had something to do with. So it's, I can't say that there's an example of a friend. But in my lifetime, I've met people and have gotten to know them and have become friends with them who turned out to be something different than what they represented, or they just took a wrong turn and they were no longer a friend, and in some cases even maybe thought of themselves as an enemy. I mean, these things happen and you do the best you can is what I'm trying to say. And when she sort of circled, this lady I talked about a minute ago, when she sort of circled back to me after some years and wanted, after some years of never really having any conversation with her, and she wanted to tell me all about her new lifestyle choices and all that, I could tell she was pretty ticked off that I wasn't going along with it, really wasn't saying much of anything, and it infuriated her. And so I realized, well, there's really nothing, I'm not obligated to try to talk her out of this or anything like that. I'm just not obligated to do that. I can say something, offer a kind word, a word of encouragement or something, but you have to gauge it that way. And I don't want to like over answer your question, but those are things that come to mind when I'm thinking about when your question, you know, when do I quit? Well, when you think it's the right time to quit. Did I answer that question sufficiently, Cyrus? Is there anything more to it that I didn't pick up on?
No, I think that that answers it from a couple of different perspectives of how close this friend is. Like for me, for me to call someone my friend, it means a lot. That's like they're fam. If someone is a friend, I consider them almost like family. And you know, I would never give up on my friend. But that doesn't mean I would badger them about the faith every time we see each other. I've got to talk about what happened at Mass, or you missed this and you're not doing this right in your life. You just kind of lead by example, or show the faith through how you live your life, and over time that your friend is going to be attracted to that and is going to want to know more. So it's a little patience, or a lot of patience in some cases. Is there any merit to that approach?
No, there certainly is. And there's a, obviously there's a beautiful thing about loyalty and friendship. I guess the difficulty that hobbled me is that because I couldn't ask him any questions to help me triangulate and figure out what kind of friendship this is, I don't really know. I mean, it sounds like you're talking about a real true friend that you've known for a long time, and there's so much invested in this, and the relationship is so important that, sure, you're not going to give up on somebody. That makes complete sense, and I agree with that. But there are different shades of friendship, different degrees of friendship, and especially if it's not someone like who's a bosom pal that you've known a long time and gone through a lot of shared experiences. I'm not proposing that you give up on people per se, like give up on the person, but I understood the gentleman's question to be, when do I give up trying to reason with this person about X, Y, or Z? So I didn't mean give up on the person, but if every time you bring this up, you just get the door slammed in your face, well, you don't have to keep knocking on that door. You know, maybe the time will come when the other person will knock on the door and ask for you to come in. That can happen. Good point, Cyrus. Real good point. And by the way, I've got an email, Cyrus. You're mentioned in it. Patrick, I'm offended by your show. I'm going to read that right after this.
Thanks.